Second hour, Monday edition, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you, reacting to all of the football this weekend. Lots of great games across college, NFL. Titans fall 33-19 to the Rams. We get back into the two-tone blue. Home opener yesterday, and the Titans hung in there for the most part in that game until the last quarter and a half when the Rams put the pedal to the metal, showed that they were the more talented team, got a couple of big touchdowns, the strip sack on Cam Ward, and pulled away for a two-touchdown victory. Let's go to L'Jarius Sneed here, because I've seen a lot of mixed reactions to L'Jarius Sneed's performance yesterday. And first off, the most important thing with L'Jarius Sneed is that he played a lot yesterday. I haven't seen, did TD tweet out the snap counts? I believe he did.
Jim Wyatt did. I can double check.
Yeah,
I know he played the entirety of, but he played right. He played at least three-fourths of the game.
Way more than I thought. Here you go. Yeah, Jim Wyatt did tweet these out. L'Jarius Sneed played 56 snaps, 92% of the snaps. So for being on a 20 snap pitch count last week to basically playing the entire game for L'Jarius Sneed. And I've seen some tweets and comments that L'Jarius Sneed played bad, and it confuses me because obviously the one play that a lot of people are going to remember is he did get burnt by Devontae Adams on the touchdown pass down the sideline on third down. Like, that was, it was not a good play. Adams hit him with the stutter step, got some separation. Sneed couldn't catch up. He gave up the touchdown. So Sneed wasn't perfect yesterday, but the two goal line stands the Titans had where they held the Rams to three, and in a close game at that point, those were huge plays. L'Jarius Sneed could be personally responsible for both of them. He made some great plays against Devontae Adams. Now, he probably got away with some contact, but when you're L'Jarius Sneed and you have that kind of pedigree of being one of the better cornerbacks in the league like he was in Kansas City, I think you avoid some of those calls that maybe a Jarvis Brownlee would get. And I really thought that was the best we've seen L'Jarius Sneed look in a Titans uniform. Was it perfect? No, but I think it shows you that he still can be an above-average level cornerback, which is what you need with that room being as thin as it is.
What have we been saying? Just play like a top 20 corner, and that helps this secondary tremendously. He had a nice pass breakup last week versus Cortland Sutton that I'm like, okay, that kind of looks like the L'Jarius Sneed of old. He looked good for the most part yesterday, did give up the touchdown late to Devontae Adams, but other than that, the fact that he played as much as he did without practicing a majority of the offseason, that is encouraging.
Yeah, he was sticky on Devontae Adams, which I'd be interested to see how he does against more speed, because that did hurt him last year. Like Tyreek Hill, I understand he just broke his streak, by the way, of no 30-plus yard catches for over a year. He did have one yesterday in the Dolphins' loss to the Patriots, which, underrated game, by the way. That game with the Patriots and Dolphins didn't get a lot of eyes because I don't think either of those teams are all that good, but the Dolphins return a punt for a touchdown, and then the Patriots return the ensuing kickoff for a touchdown. They end up winning that game. But I thought L'Jarius Sneed overall looked really good. And that is so massive for this team, because we saw the Titans trying to blitz just over and over and over against the Rams and couldn't get home. And I think part of that is that McVay and Stafford are so experienced, and it's like they are ready for everything, and Stafford is he's going to get the ball out fast. But I think it's also going to be a problem all year that the Titans just aren't going to be able to get to the quarterback.
Yeah, I always knew that McVay was a great play caller, one of the best, because all of his assistant coaches, wherever they go to be head coaches, it seems like they always pan out, the McVay Shanahan trees. But just seeing it yesterday in person for myself, It was tremendous. I believe there was either a third and short, fourth and short in the first quarter, and the play call I thought was just brilliant. He had Matthew Stafford do a little RPO, get out on the move a little bit on the roll to the right, dump it off to Davis Warren, I believe it was, one of the tight ends.
Maybe Higbee.
Yeah, Higbee, that's who it was. Got the touchdown. It was just beautiful. It was just like situational football. Like, that's what it should look like.
Yeah, I thought the Titans were outmatched talent-wise and, of course, coaching-wise. Like, even though I think Brian Callahan wasn't an outright disaster yesterday, he still got outcoached by Sean McVay, which most coaches are going to get outcoached by Sean McVay. He's a great coach. And then you also have, like, the Titans just didn't make enough plays, especially on the defensive side of the ball. That fourth and one on the first drive of the game, Xavier Woods had Puka Nacua dead to rights. And I think Xavier Woods has played really well early on in his Titans career. He has made plays.
Yep.
Like, he thumped a guy yesterday and knocked the ball out. I think he's played well, but man, on that play, fourth and one, when you had it stopped and then it goes for a touchdown, that just can't happen. And those are the types of plays that the Titans just aren't making. That's the difference between winning and losing. And that wasn't good enough. And then they just didn't get enough pressure. Is it, what, two sacks in two games now for the Titans? Well, you've given up 11?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I have the sack breakdown here in a second, but yeah.
That's
no pressure on Stafford yesterday.
Right.
They got
the one sack on the blitz with Hooker, which, again, they didn't really get home. Stafford just kind of lost his balance as he tried to step up in the pocket. They blitzed over and over because the edge could not get any kind of pressure. I saw Jeffrey Simmons beat one double team, and he did forced a punt early on in the game. So Jeffrey Simmons, he wasn't as impactful as he was in week one, but he did show up a couple of times. But the edge position was just non-existent. Just completely non-existent. There was not a single time where I noticed Draymond Jones, Arden Key. There was one play, and I wrote it down, there was one play where Femi was decent. It was on the third down play right before the Puka end around for a touchdown. Femi did blow up the tight end and ended up causing that run to come up short. So I will give Femi Oladejo credit. I saw him one time. But outside of that, the edge rushers were pretty much non-factors. And when you did blitz, no one got home. That cannot happen. It just cannot happen. But L'Jarius Sneed playing well does at least make you feel better about what the back end could be. Roger McCreary made another play yesterday. No penalties for Jarvis Brownlee yesterday, at least that I can remember. And your safety plays good. Kevin Winston hopefully will be back next week, you would think. But overall, the defense took a step back yesterday. And it was against a much better offense and a much better quarterback. But the defense that we saw in Denver did not show up yesterday, especially in the second half against the Rams. Matthew in Nashville asking, what did y'all think about the blindside block on what would have been a punt return touchdown for DK? Yeah, we mentioned this earlier. It was the right call. Like, Cedric Gray was blocking back towards his own end zone. That is, by the letter of the law, that is an illegal blindside block. Like, yeah, the guy saw him. But that's why they've instituted this rule of, like, what you need to do is just get in their way. As long as you don't engage with them, it's not a penalty. Just go and stand in their way and throw your arms up like that. Like, that would have been fine, and DK likely would have scored. But you can't block moving back towards your own goal line. Cedric Gray did it. Again, didn't end up really mattering because the Titans did go down and score. But it would have been nice. Would have been the Titans' first punt return touchdown and 13 years.
The crowd was fired up after that,
yeah,
too. They were fired up. They needed something to be fired up about.
Yeah. Did Ring of Fire play after the punt return before the flag came in?
It did.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
so they did get the trumpets going?
It did, yeah.
Right. Like, it stinks. I think it was the right call, but it obviously is disappointing because the special teams, and we'll get into this a little bit later, too, I thought the special teams were great again. Bones Fossil, man. He has come in and made that unit, so far, I would say one of the best in the league. Like, you blocked an extra point yesterday, too. Joey Sly has been perfect through 2 weeks, and they've needed him a lot because they can't seem to score when they get across midfield. Like, it's been a really good start for special teams. Shout out to Bones Fossil. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the show. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. More on the Titans coming up next. The offensive line, not good again. 11 sacks through 2 weeks, and Cam Ward deserves blame for part of it, but they aren't getting enough, out of a highly priced free agent in Dan Moore. We'll talk about it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game.
We just felt like, you know, John had is a steadier performer. He had better knowledge of what was being asked of him over the course of the week, and decided to make that move. And again, I don't know that he was necessarily good enough at the moment either, so we'll reevaluate that again, but we'll see.
That was Brian Callahan talking about the decision to start John Ajukwu at right tackle in the absence of J.C. Latham yesterday. And for Ajukwu, it wasn't good, especially early. Had a false start and then got beat pretty much immediately to start off the day. It wasn't, I wouldn't call it quite like a Dennis Daly, Andre Dillard disaster, Nicholas Petit-Frere, but it wasn't good in any way. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. We were just talking defense for the Titans yesterday. We flip over to the offense. I will say, Corey Curtis texting me on my personal text line, and we'll have Corey on Wednesday for the full show. He said, I did notice Arden Key when he lined up offsides. And I believe Draymond Jones might have done that too. So, yeah, I guess that's the only time you really noticed the Titans pass rushers yesterday.
I second that, Corey.
Yes. Not a good day for the Titans pass rush. Not a good day for the Titans tackles. And Dan Moore is, I mean, Dan Moore is number one on that list. Even though John Ajukwu wasn't good, did we expect John Ajukwu to be all that good? No. Dan Moore came in with an $80 million contract, and he has been absolutely disastrous through 2 weeks. Like, gave up the most pressures in the league in week one, and yesterday he got blown by multiple times. There were a couple times where it looked like his feet were stuck in the mud while Verse or Byron Young or whoever it is just ran right past him. Dan Moore's got to be better. And I know it's early. It's only week two, and sometimes it takes a little bit for these veteran offensive linemen to adjust to a new offensive line coach, who they're playing next to, but Dan Moore hasn't been good enough. And I will say, please, please, J.C. Latham, be healthy enough to play this week, because you cannot have two liabilities at tackle. And I think J.C. Latham, when healthy, is a really good right tackle. I think he will be. He wasn't healthy against the Broncos, and he wasn't very good. But if he can be healthy, at the very least, the Titans have to feel okay about their offensive line. But right now, those pass rushers on the other side are just pinning their ears back and going to work against two guys who have just not been good enough.
Here's a stat courtesy of Paul Kaharsky. The Titans' sacks allowed of Will Levis through first 2 weeks of 2024, three against the Chicago Bears, four against New York Giants, seven in total. Sacks allowed of Cam Ward through first 2 weeks of 2025, six against the Broncos, five against the Rams, 11 total. So that's four more than in the first 2 weeks than last year in 2024.
Yeah, and Cam Ward is not absolved of blame for some of these sacks. He has held the ball too long, and actually, I just saw Willie Donick, who you can hear starting at 3 o'clock on DVD. He tweeted out a screenshot of the play where Cam Ward was stripped and ended up setting up what ended up being the final nail in the coffin for the Titans yesterday. And had a pretty clean pocket with Chig Okonkwo open on a drag route running across his face, didn't see him, ended up leaving the ball a little bit too loose, got it poked out, and ends up really, the game was over at that point. The Titans had a chance to get a stop and see if they could keep it within one score, but it felt pretty over at that point. And Cam Ward's got to be better at going through his reads quickly and getting the ball out fast. He has to be better. But I'd say more often than not, the sacks have been on instant pressure against these tackles. Dan Moore, especially, it cannot be this bad when you're paying him $82 million. And I understand it's not like you signed him expecting him to be an all-pro. We said that since he was signed. I was on the air the day he was signed, pretty much 5 minutes after he was signed, and we said that, yeah, pretty much by all accounts, this is the best tackle that you could go get on the market, because good tackles don't hit the market. But he hasn't even been serviceable. And that's all you were hoping for, I think, with Dan Moore. He has not been serviceable. On our YouTube chat, Josh asks, who's replacing him? If the Titans don't have Moore, they have no left tackle. If Latham is hurt, they have no right tackle. Yeah, no one's replacing him. It's Dan Moore's job. Like, I'm not advocating for him to get benched, because We know that it's worse behind him with Ajukwu or Udo or Crenshaw Dixon, who I guess just got waived, which they made a whole big deal about how they didn't want to risk losing young, talented tackles, and then they waive him to call Corey Levin up. I mean, it's really not good. Steven from Hendersonville says, Dan Moore is stealing every time he cashes his paycheck. It's only 2 weeks. Again, like, it is early to completely condemn Dan Moore and his signing as a disaster, but he's been really, really, really bad through 2 weeks. And it has to start now. Like, he's got to get better now against the Colts. Because Cam Ward can't keep getting sacked 5 times a game. That is just not sustainable. Eventually, he's going to get hurt. Ricky says, we played way better defenses the first 2 weeks this year, too. And that's fair. Like, in terms of pass rushes, this might be the two best pass rushes that you see all year long. You're getting Benito. You're getting Verse. You're getting Young. Fisk. Like, you faced two really good pass rushes back-to-back weeks to start the year. So patience has to be preached here, that you're not benching Dan Moore, you're not cutting Dan Moore after two bad weeks. But if you're going to keep your young quarterback healthy and on the field, which is, that is basically the main point of this season, is for Cam Ward to develop. He's got to be on the field. And with that, he can't keep getting sacked 5 times a game. That starts with Dan Moore.
Yeah. And it's like I've been saying, like, you're not competing in the AFC North anymore. So you're not going up against TJ Watt. You're not going up against Myles Garrett. You're not going up against Trey Hendrickson all the time. You're competing in the AFC South, a lot lesser. There are still some great edge rushers, but a lot lesser talent in the edge rusher department. If I'm paying $80 million for you, I expect you to at least hold up your end of the bargain.
Yep.
You're not an elite level left tackle, clearly, but I got to get more than what I'm seeing right now, no pun intended.
And on the edge this week, these aren't scrubs. Kwity Paye and Leiatu Latu, who actually is hurt right now, so whether he plays or not, that's yet to be seen. We'll find out later this week. Samson Ebukam, Tyquan Lewis, JT Tuiomolau. Like, there are some talented pass rushers on there, but there's nobody like the last 2 weeks where it's like, we have to game plan specifically for this game wrecker. And Dan Moore, you're paying him that much money, he's going to have to be on an island with the best pass rusher for the other team a lot of the time. You can give him help when you can, but like, you're paying this guy this much money, you have to be able to trust him. And so far, you haven't been able to do that. Cam Ward, again, he deserves some blame for these sacks too. And I thought he was better this week at getting the ball out. There was a couple of times where he did the smart thing and just got it away when the pressure came. But he also has to improve. It's a team. Sacks are a team stat, not specifically an individual every single time. But Dan Moore has been a liability on the line. It has to be better. And, man, J.C. Latham, he's got to be back. He's got to be healthy. It is very good news that he didn't go on IR, right? Because if they were going to put him on IR, it would have happened last week. You're not going to do it this week and make him miss 4 games. So I would think that maybe J.C. Latham is going to be back this week. But if he's not, you need the guys who are in there to perform better. And that starts with Bill Callahan. I know a lot of people are going after the Callahans, and Brian has had his issues, but Bill has to... You clearly consulted Bill when you signed Dan Moore, right? Like, I can't be under the impression that they just signed Moore and said, here you go, Bill, fix this one. Like, you would think that Bill Callahan was consulted and said that he saw something in Moore that he could turn into a good left tackle. And you got to earn your money at some point. Both of you guys, Bill Callahan, Dan Moore, you got to find a way to make this offensive line better. And right now, 11 sacks through 2 games. You're on track for what? 90-something sacks?
Yeah, and it wasn't all... Like, Dan Moore was... You didn't really notice him as much as some of the other guys. There were some penalties on Kevin Zeitler. Right tackle, obviously, is going to be a turnstile without J.C. Latham. It's just this collective unit. We haven't seen progress.
Yep.
And that's the frustrating thing when you have an offensive line guru like Bill Callahan, you just haven't seen it.
Yep.
Haven't seen the product on the field.
Yeah, 93 and a half sacks is what the Titans are on track for. I would really, really hope that trend doesn't stay consistent. I mean, that would be, what's the record for most times being sacked in a season?
Last year, I think, with the Bears and Caleb Williams.
68?
Yeah, I think that might be the record. I can double check.
I mean, I don't think the Titans are going to be. Most sacks allowed by a team is 104. At least that's what I'm getting on. Yeah, 104 sacks allowed by the Eagles in 1986. Whew, that's really bad.
It could always be worse.
I guess it could always be worse. The Giants second at 85 in 2023. So currently, the Titans are on pace for the second most sacks allowed in NFL history. It's early. Again, they're not going to give up 93 sacks, but that is 104. I am shocked that that happened. And that's in a 16-game season, too. The Bears last year were 11th most all-time with 68. So, Titans on track for a historically bad sack season. Again, it's 2 weeks. I'll keep saying it. There is room for improvement, of course, but it has to start now. Like, you can't have Cam Ward keep getting hit, because eventually he's going to get hurt, and no one wants to see Brandon Allen out there. I'm sorry, Brandon. I'm sure you're a really good guy. You're talented enough to play in the NFL, but no one wants to watch Brandon Allen play quarterback. And you're getting close to that if you keep letting Cam Ward get hit as much as he has. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. More on the Titans coming up here on the program. Also, we will get into the rest of the crazy weekend of college football. We haven't dove into Tennessee, Georgia. We'll talk a little bit about that game in the final hour. Also, Notre Dame, A&M, LSU beats Florida State, and then Brian Kelly embarrasses himself at the podium again after, and plenty more on the Titans. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game, Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly. Reaction Monday here after the Titans fall 33-19 to the Rams yesterday at Nissan Stadium. 0-2 on the year. They'll look to rebound at home again against the Colts on Sunday. We've had a lot of bad things to say about the Titans so far. I will get a little positive here just for one segment and say that despite all of the bad things the Titans have done, I actually think they've done better than I expected them to through 2 weeks. Is that crazy to say, Parker, that, you know, last week, all of the coaching issues, if you want to call them that, coaching mishaps, and then yesterday just got out-talented late in the game, but I didn't really expect them to be in either of these games in the second half. Like, the Rams and Broncos, I look at those teams as just bad matchups for the Titans. And to be fair, they were in both of those games in the second half. Like, they were winning at halftime against the Rams yesterday. They were winning in the second half against the Broncos last week. Not saying they've done well, but the way this roster is constructed, I didn't think that they were going to match up well with either the Broncos or the Rams, especially with a rookie quarterback making his first couple of starts. And to be honest, I think that they have competed better than I expected. But again, it's, you know, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Like
the famous saying.
Right. Like, you don't take moral victories, but I will say, I did not expect them to be in those games in the second half and giving you the thought of, like, hey, they could win these. They could win. And they had that feeling in both those games. Obviously, neither of them work out. And that's something that has to improve. You got to be able to, like, this was an issue back before the Titans got to those 5 or 6 straight winning seasons from 16 to 21, where they just couldn't get over the hump. Like, you were competitive, but the good teams put you away late. They have to find a way to play a full 60 minutes. They're just not there yet against good teams. But the roster's not good. The coaching hasn't been good. You've got a rookie quarterback back there. And despite all that, they've been in these games with good teams. So, you know, not to say that they've played well, because they haven't, but they've been competitive. They've been in these games, and you got to give them a little bit of props for that. There was a text earlier that I wanted to get to. Here we go. 0598. This is a long text into our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Says, I'm trying to approach this season with one word, patience. Not trying to defend some of the coaching decisions. However, my question is, do we continue to set unrealistic expectations? We knew we were going to be bad. We knew we were going to be rebuilding. We knew we lacked talent on this roster. We know the goal, which is to rebuild through the draft. So why do we panic when we lose games? Again, we knew this was going to happen. And I think that's a great way to put it from 0598 is that, yes, heading into the season, everybody kind of knew that this team wasn't going to be very good. But I think once you get into a football game and the clock actually starts running and you spot the ball, all that kind of goes away for fans. It's like, yeah, I had low expectations, but now that they're playing the game, I want to see them win. And I understand that when you're in these games and you come up short, it feels like you're disappointed in the way the team played. But it's like, there should be low expectations. The Titans themselves have set low expectations for this team. Like, again, everybody goes back to the Big Joe Dubin question. Like, Big Joe,
Chad Brinker laughed.
Big Joe asked, can this team win the Super Bowl? And Chad Brinker giggled, and Mike Borgonzi kind of brushed it off and just said, yeah, we got a lot of work to do. Like, that's always the goal, but we got a lot of work to do. They're telling you that this team is not going to be a playoff contender this year. And everybody should know that based on the way this team is constructed. This season is about two things. Is Brian Callahan your head coach moving forward? Is Cam Ward your quarterback for the long haul? So far, I think you're starting to get answers on both of those things. It's early, and you've got to see how both of them develop. But right now, Brian Callahan trending in the wrong direction, and I think Cam Ward trending in the right direction.
Fair enough to say. I guess if we're taking a glass half full approach, they haven't gotten absolutely pantsed like I thought they would in the first 2 weeks.
Right.
So I was expecting the L.A. Rams game to be way worse than the Broncos game. It was not. Cam Ward has taken some steps in the right direction. Brian Callahan has not done anything to save his job, but at least Cam Ward has taken steps in the right direction. Your hopeful franchise quarterback, Alec Ayomanor, has had some
great
performances the last 2 weeks. So if you're looking for things to hang your hat on, that's certainly two things.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what the Lions did to the Bears yesterday. I expected one of these games to go that way, right? Like, heading into the season, you look at these matchups, I expected either the Broncos or the Rams, like you said, to just pants the Titans. Kind of like the Lions game for the Titans last year, the Commanders game, where it's over midway through the second quarter and you're just watching to see what Cam Ward can do in garbage time. Yeah, it got to garbage time yesterday, but Cam Ward had the ball late in that game, down by four, and he fumbled it. Like, it's little plays here and there, little mistakes that have taken the Titans out of these games and not allowed them to come through. This team's not talented enough to compete with playoff teams right now, to win games with playoff teams right now. But I'm excited to see what they do on Sunday, because I think the Colts are a much better matchup on paper. I know the Colts, they've been one of the best teams in football so far this year. They haven't punted yet this season. Like, how crazy is that to say that a Daniel Jones-led Colts offense has not punted yet this year? So I'm not saying the Colts are a bad team, but I think it's a better matchup on paper for the Titans, and I'm excited to see what the Titans can do against a team that has lower expectations than what you've seen in the first week. So I think the Titans have, in some ways, exceeded expectations by being in these games late, but also the way they've lost the games has not been good in terms of the sins still popping up, bad game management decisions, and, you know, Cam Ward, we've talked about how he's taken care of the football pretty well through the first couple of weeks. No interceptions, but he did fumble in a huge spot, ended up costing the Titans a chance to come back in that game.
And with the Broncos game, it's not like the Titans put themselves in an opportunity to win the game, but the opportunity presented itself because the Broncos turned the ball over so much, which the Titans did force on the defensive end, so at least that's a positive thing to look at. And you had the lead over the Rams at half. You just forgot how to play football in the second.
Right, and as this team rebuilds and continues to improve, you'll hopefully see them play better late into games and be able to hang with these teams longer. But right now, they're just not there. Wes in Clarksville on our text line says, have faith, guys. We have the same record as the Chiefs. It's very true. It is very true.
There we go.
The Titans and Chiefs, both 0-2. Let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dylan is on the line wanting to chime in. Dylan, good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to say I want to respectfully disagree with Trey. He called in earlier.
We've gotten a lot of that.
Saying that the Brights, yeah. So I actually think Calvin Ridley has been like a – he's just not lived up to what he's supposed to be. But I think the bright spot for me has actually been this draft class. I think everyone from Gunnar Helm, Aya Manor, DK, Cam Ward, I think this draft class in general has been a huge bright spot because – it's been so long since we've had this many picks feel like they are hitting. And then I also want to talk about Bill Callahan. I know that, you know, he got a lot of crap last year, but, I mean, he had bad players last year, and we were expecting him to make bad players good. This year I feel like there's solid players, and I feel like he's supposed to be elevating them to play better than they're supposed to be, kind of like the way Vrabel would get his teams to. But it just seems like Bill Callahan isn't getting the line to take that next step or elevate them. And I just want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
Thanks for the call, Dylan. No, that it's a good point because Bill Callahan, you brought in Bill with Brian because he was supposed to be the guy who, like Dylan said, could elevate offensive line play. There's a difference between making bad players good. You can't do that. Nicolas Petitfrere was a bad player. They couldn't make him good. That was a bad evaluation from them, too, thinking that they could just run with Nicolas Petitfrere at right tackle and figure it out. But this year, I've gone through the investment on the offensive line 100 times. All the money that's gone into that, all the draft capital. Bill Callahan should be able to work with that group. And so far, 11 sacks just isn't good enough. And I think he'd tell you that, too. It is early. It's only week two. Sometimes these things take time. But you have to start seeing the development and the progress now. Like, you can't just let Cam Ward sit back there and get hit 5-10 times a game. They've got to keep him clean, and it just hasn't been good enough. On Calvin Ridley, like, I don't – Trey was saying that Calvin Ridley's the only bright spot right now. I don't really understand that. Like, Calvin Ridley hasn't looked very good through the first 2 weeks.
Ellick was the star receiver yesterday, right? Not Calvin.
And the rookies, if you're looking for hope as a Titans fan, look at the young players. And it stinks that J.C. Latham and Tavondre Sweater both hurt because those are two more guys who you expect to be foundational pieces when this team starts to be good again. But the rookies have all pretty much stood out. Like, Cam Ward looks good. I think Femi is a work in progress. Like, I don't know if you're going to leave this season thinking that Femi is going to be a star. But let's see a year in the system what he can do next year. That it feels more like
he's the definition of a project. He hasn't played outside backer / edge rusher for even an entire calendar year yet.
Right. Like, I don't know if you can't really judge Femi a ton on the production this year. But those fourth round pass catchers, Chim looks like a great returner, and he's made some plays on the offensive side of the ball. Ellick looks like he could be a legit wide receiver in this league. I'm not saying like a wide receiver one, but he could end up being you need a number two. I think he could end up being your number two, and then you draft somebody early to end up being the running mate with those two guys. Gunnar Helm has made some plays. I really like this rookie class, and if Sweat and Latham get healthy and continue to show development, you can see the core that this team is trying to build around, and that's important. But, you know, right now, that core being as young as they are isn't going to lead to a ton of wins, and we've seen that so far.
Right. This team is starting from the stubs, and at least there are some foundational pieces that you can – okay, we could see the light at the end of the tunnel. I wanted to make just one quick point on the offensive line real quick. Bill Callahan's not Jesus, and the people that they had on the offensive line last year, he can't turn water into wine.
No.
He can't do that. This year – if you don't think that Bill Callahan had a say in the signing of Dan Moore, you're crazy, because he did. But there's nothing that you can do about the depth at tackle. It's just not there. If you don't have J.C. Latham out there, I don't even think Jeff Stoutland with the Eagles can fix that. But when J.C. Latham is out there and the offensive line is still not gelling to the level that you would hope, that's the part that I'm concerned about.
Right. J.C. Latham has to get healthy. And when those five guys are out there consistently, you have to see them play better. And it's obvious, but like the offensive line going to play a huge role in Cam Ward's development this year. If they keep getting him sacked five times a game, he's not going to be out there very long. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Dustin from Hopkinsville says, I'm going to call soon. Hold your breath and prepare for greatness. So I guess we'll wait and see when Dustin calls.
Gotta beat out Trey.
Yeah, Trey already has call of the morning so far. We're going to have a quick segment coming up next. I have something I have to get off my chest. The funeral of Virginia Tech football coming up. Jay Kleiman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jay Kleiman, Parker Kelly with you, wrapping up hour number two. We'll have more on the Titans throughout the rest of the show. Also going to talk Tennessee and Georgia, instant classic, Saturday afternoon. But on Saturday night, Virginia Tech football finally met its end. The Hokies, once a proud program of the ACC, are no longer. Falling behind 38-7 to Old Dominion on their home turf, eventually falling 45-26. What a disgrace on Saturday night in Blacksburg. I grew up going to games in Blacksburg where Tyrod Taylor was the quarterback and Virginia Tech was a top 10 team competing to try and go play for a national championship. And now this team is 0-3 for the first time since Frank Beamer's first year as the head coach in 1987. Brent Pry has been fired. So at the very least, Virginia Tech knows how to do something. They did get rid of Brent Pry. And we'll see who they bring in. But the death of Virginia Tech football happened in three parts, all bookended by ODU losses. Back in 2018, Virginia Tech was 2-0, having beaten a ranked Florida State team in Tallahassee and blown out William & Mary, and they were the number 12 team in the country. They went to Norfolk, Virginia, and lost 49-35 to ODU. That was the start of the end of Virginia Tech football. A couple years later, Justin Fuente gets fired. Virginia Tech brings in Brent Pry, thinking maybe this up-and-coming coordinator could be the CEO-type guy that they need to bring Virginia Tech back to greatness. Guess where his first game is? Norfolk, Virginia. And they lose to Old Dominion for the second time in 4 years. And on Saturday night, Brent Pry's career as the head coach at Virginia Tech bookended by losses to the Old Dominion Monarchs. And this one, the most embarrassing yet. Down 28-0 at halftime to ODU on your home field at night. 38-7 in the second half. Embarrassing. Just embarrassing. And Brent Pry, no longer the head coach at Virginia Tech. I don't think it'll ever get back to where it was. I think at this point, Hokies fans should just be out there hoping that you can get a coach who can get you to 7 or 8 wins every year. But Virginia Tech football is dead, and I don't think it's ever coming back. Bookended by losses to the Monarchs, Ricky Ronnie has officially put the final nail in the coffin for the Hokies.
Jake, I just want to say I want to send my sincerest condolences to you and to all of Blacksburg. It's a shame that when we talk about Virginia Tech football, it's Enter Sandman, and that is it. I saw the halftime line, and I immediately thought of you, my friend. I'm so sorry. The good news is you have Wofford this week. Maybe that's a win.
It's the last winnable game on the schedule, it seems.
Yeah.
The Philip Montgomery, the OC, is going to be the interim head coach. So my older sister went to Old Dominion. So there's kind of a little family rivalry there. And since they had beaten Tech twice, we were texting about it on Saturday. And about an hour before the game, I texted, I guarantee the Hokies will not lose this game. Tech by 20. Just thinking, like, they got embarrassed by Vanderbilt in the second half. They're going to bounce back. Like, that was my only thought was, like, there has to be some sort of pride from this team of, like, you just got outgained by 300 yards in the second half a week ago, and you've got ODU coming in this week. I thought they were going to prove that there's still a little bit of fight. But they gave up on Brent Pry. And clearly Brent Pry no longer the head coach. And I texted my family when it was 21-0. I said, that may have been the worst guarantee of my life. Virginia Tech football is dead. Brent Pry should be fired tomorrow. And he was. I don't know who I want the Hokies to hire. I mean, they're up-and-coming guys. The guy that people keep talking about is Michael Vick. Like, and I get he's not doing very well with Norfolk State, but it's like maybe that's something to bring the juice back to the program.
That would bring some juice back.
Shane Beamer's going to get a call. I don't think he might just say wrong number and hang up. Like, I don't think he wants to come back to Blacksburg. It's a disaster. The only thing that kept me from being absolutely depressed on Saturday night was watching Vandy just boat race South Carolina on the other screen. I dual screened it. Actually, I had the 4-box up on YouTube TV.
Helpful for times like this.
Right. And so at least I could just turn my attention slightly to Vanderbilt beating South Carolina 31-7. I'm full on anchor down now. We're Vandying the, like, until Virginia Tech football proves that they can be competent again and not be the laughingstock of that state, like, they might be the fifth best team in Virginia right now. And that's sad.
Yeah, because that is
sad. They were the standard in the state of Virginia for 30 years. I mean, UVA's only beaten Virginia Tech twice in my lifetime. That's going to change this year.
Who else would be? Liberty?
JMU, ODU.
Yeah.
I'd put all those teams above Virginia Tech right now. And
if you
sad.
Need me to go get you some tissues, I can
it's
real
sad.
Quick.
There we go. My funeral to Virginia Tech
yep.
football.
RIP.
We had this quick segment at the end of the hour, and I had to get that off
a good
my
run.
Chest.
It was a good run.
It was a good run. The Hokies are done. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back into the Titans. We'll get into the Vols a little bit coming up on the other side. Vols in Georgia, what a game on Saturday. And we'll talk about it coming up next. Tennessee may not have won the game, and I know there are no moral victories, but they look like a playoff team on Saturday. Also, some other big games on Saturday, and again, we'll get more into the Titans' loss to the Rams 33-19 on Sunday. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, final hour coming up next. You're on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game.